Okay, what is your name?
Lori Cryer.
And where do you live?
Ashland, Kansas.
Okay, and what is your occupation?
I work at Stock River State Bank.
Okay, and how old are you?
I am 52.
Okay. When did you first become aware of the Starbuck fire, hereafter referred to the fire that occurred on March 6th?
Probably around 10:30 a.m. was the first call to that. I work with Bill Nyer, who is a fireman, and he was called. Well, actually, it wasn't even him that was called out. It was Englewood that was called out to go out to a fire, and it came over his radio that he carries with him. So we heard about it then.
And what was your immediate reaction?
Oh, crap, there's a fire, and it's this windy.
So what were your thoughts when you first learned that the fire would maybe hit your property?
Oh, there was a lot of thoughts. My first thing I did was text my kids and say they're evacuating Ashland. And then when the call was actually made that they were going to evacuate Ashland, the first thing I did was text my kid and say, this is really happening.
Yeah, good.
Well.
So how long were you at the bank?
We left like around 2 or 2:30 sometime. You know, you didn't really pay attention to the time after a certain point.
Before the evacuation notice came?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then did you evacuate?
No.
Where did you go?
Well, I went home. I loaded up stuff. I packed my 3 dogs and water and food for them and grabbed all my cameras. And my husband was there, and he says, where do we go and what do we do? And I said, we're supposed to go to Coldwater. And we started to drive away. For some odd reason, he took off over by the new hospital on the west side of town. And he said something about, I think I should go wet down the trees at his studio, at his shop. And because he has a line of cedar trees there. And I said, well, surely we got a couple of minutes to do that. Well, a couple of minutes turned into time and time and time and time, so we didn't leave, because by the time the thought was, we better get out of here, you drove to the outskirts of town and you didn't know what you were going to run into. I was afraid we were going to run into fire or smoke or wouldn't be able to stay on the road, and it was turn around, go back home, because that's your safest bet.
So did you run around town, or did you just go home and stay, or did people come by and tell you to evacuate, or what happened?
Stayed up there with him for quite some time, 30 minutes, an hour, something like that. And I said, well, if you're going to stay here and do this, I'm going to go take some pictures. I'm going to go. Actually, the whole point was just to go up to the cemetery, up to the top of the hill, and see what I could see. At first, I couldn't see a whole lot, and the wind was still out of the southwest at that point in time. And you couldn't see a whole lot. I actually got on the phone and I called a coworker to make sure that they made it to Coldwater, because their family wasn't in town. And they said, oh, well, it looks like the wind's going to have switched from the north. I think it's going to be okay now. And at the time that she said that, I looked directly, I'll get my direction straight, northwest, and I could see a huge flame. And it was far away, so I knew we were in it still. I knew it was still coming, and I got pretty shook up, went and tried to tell my husband, figure out if there was anything we could do. And at this point, we decided we really couldn't do anything. So, yeah, I drove around and watched the fire go around us the whole time and took pictures from my phone. I posted it on Facebook. And it kind of started out like that. I posted a picture of the fire from the west coming up behind the high school. And I, to friends and family, and said, pray for us. So I put that on Facebook so my family and stuff would know what was going on. And I got all kinds of comments about, you know, where's it at now and where's it at now. So that was kind of my encouragement to, I'd go over here and see, I'd drive north, I'd drive up to the cemetery, which was a great vantage point. And that's as far east as I got. I didn't get any further than the Tower Road on the west side. And I didn't get any further than the airport out here, and I didn't get any further than the golf course to the north.
So what type of pictures did you take?
Mostly pictures of the fire and, things in front of the fire. I never really got anything specifically burning. I never saw a house burn down. I never saw a barn burn down. So it was more of the glows and how fast the fire was coming in and which direction it was going, how high it was going. I even took a video of it crossing the highway out here on just the east side of Bear Creek.
So did you stay up all night?
I got to a point where I was, you heard reports. I ran into people. There were other people in town, not a lot, but there were some. And plus, between that and Facebook, you'd hear about, I heard about Mark Gardner's house, and then I heard about Bozeiden's house, and that Garth Gardner was fighting and fighting and fighting to save his, and that Kit Walker was over there helping him, and his dad's house or mom's house had burned down, and I don't think I heard about Janae and Matt Wilson's until later. But, reports were coming in, and what I saw, I didn't know how houses could. I could have sworn that Cotton Boss house was gone. I could have sworn that Kellenberger's house was gone, and everybody on the Lake Road. I didn't know how. I mean, I'm sitting there watching this. How did they make it? I don't know.
So most of the information that you were getting about burned houses was coming like from Facebook or from people that had actually seen it happen?
I had one that had actually, they didn't see it, but they were with Amy and Cal Robinson were with the Bozeidens right after.
Right.
So that one I knew was confirmed. The other one with Gardner's I knew was confirmed because he had spoken directly to Kendall, and I met up with him out at the golf course when we were watching to see which way it was going, because it was so close. It was on the edge of the wheat field.
So did you take pictures until Tuesday morning, or did you kind of go home and get a nap?
I guess that's where I was going with that. Sorry. At about 8:30 or something, I was starving, and I was just overwhelmed knowing everything. And like I said, I thought it was worse than it was, because what I saw, I couldn't see how houses were surviving. So I went home, and I was very kind of just numb. I grabbed a little bite, and I went and sat and tried to get my mind off of it for a while and tried to watch what was going on and keep up with things like on Facebook and texting my kids, and which were not happy with me. And then about, 9:30, 10 o'clock, I had to get back out again. I just wanted to know if I couldn't go to sleep. I didn't know if I was okay, going to be okay. So we did. Galen jumped in the car with me and we drove. That's when we went out to the airport, because by that time it had pretty well blown on both sides of Ashland. It had come across the cemetery, and then it had come across just west of the hospital. So it had gone on both sides, east and west of Ashland, and was raging that direction. You're thinking of people's homes, Kim and Stan's, Carolyn Degnan's and these people that the vicinities, and you see these huge flames and they're just roaring by. So went out there, took a few pictures, but felt oddly comfortable that Ashland was probably out of danger, or I was out of immediate danger. And it didn't register for quite some time that wind could have changed again, and I would have had another story. So
do you remember the temperature dropping?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you remember what time or how?
Shortly after. As a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons why there's fewer pictures than you think. that I took. It was after 5:30, but not much. And the as soon as that wind changed from the north, it dropped. And by 7:30, it was dang cold. You needed a coat, and that wind was still so fast. It was still blowing 50, 60 miles an hour, and coming with that temperature was terrible.
It's coming from the north?
Yes, northwest.
So you said you kind of felt comfortable. Did you go home and get some rest then?
I did. I was exhausted. Of course, I stayed up probably till midnight or something, but I did fall asleep and then woke up real early, like 4 o'clock or something.
And then did you go back out then?
In the morning?
Mm-hmm.
Not till the sun came up. And I'll tell you what, Diana, I didn't want to. I was afraid of what I was going to see.
So was it better than you expected?
I don't know.
Worse?
Yeah. I couldn't believe it. I mean, in town was fine.
Right.
But getting out there and seeing everything black.
How far out of town did you go?
I didn't even leave town besides the cemetery it was my little safe zone. I didn't even leave town probably for a week. Me being a photographer, I was crushed because of the beauty. Go on.
The fire had its own kind of beauty, right?
I suppose at the time it was burning. Afterwards, it was really hard to find beauty in it. There were a few ironic or oddities, you know, like out at the cemetery where it burned the last two quarters of the larger part of the cemetery on the west end. It burned that completely, and everything was gone, but then you'd see a plastic flower that wasn't touched. It was unscathed, and, you know, there were weird things like that. This stuff that were left alone.
And it didn't hit all the cemetery, right?
Correct.
And then in the pasture south of the cemetery?
It got the south of the cemetery.
And what about the lane? The tree lane?
Not completely. Not very much. I'm guessing that the pavement probably protected that, and it also protected that on the east side of the tree lane of the, you know, the Golden Gate lane. On the east side, that pasture right there was not burned too bad. And the pasture, that pasture there goes up to another pasture that's on north of it. And then there's a trail that turns. And that fire did not cross that little bitty teeny weeny trail, but it crossed the highway. Just, you know, a half a mile away from it. I don't know why that trail stopped it, but it did. And so there was one pasture right there that had some live cattle in it. And
so when did you find out that the houses that you thought had burnt north of town hadn't burnt?
Well, we did. We have a disaster recovery plan at work, and so those that could went to work. And there were only a couple of us that were still in town. Some of them were EMTs and me. And others got in after they were released. The highway was open and everything. But we went in, and so Kendall was right in the middle. Being the mayor was right in the middle of everything, and so he had pretty good valid reports on who was okay and who wasn't and things like that.
So what about work? Did you have a full schedule? Did you keep the bank open the whole time? Or
what we did that next day is we opened up completely in the morning, and then there was just no activity, so we decided to close it to be just the drive up. But if somebody needed to come in and see an officer or whatever, we were going to take care of them. But we were so short-handed. Mostly it was the phone ringing off the wall, and it was mostly people wanting to know if everything was okay. Not much business happened that day.
Mostly more personal relationships to,
yeah, you know,
ease everybody's mind.
Well, maybe. I think in the beginning we were kind of a HUD we were kind of a center for Ashland and, you know, reporting and all of that. Until things kind of got sorted out, we received a lot, and then probably 2 weeks, long into months of calls that we would end up giving numbers to, but for some reason, we were a number that they would call a lot. I'm sure the city office was too, but...
And so you handled a lot of those calls mm-hmm. because of your job,
mm-hmm.
and you got to send those on to whoever they needed
Correct.
To go to?
Right.
So
we had a list that, you know, initially we had a list of numbers of, it was just real quick, like, what are we going to do? Okay, we're going to get together and we're going to have a list of, we'll sign, this person will be in charge of this, this person will be in charge of this, and this, you know, we had like 7 people that we'd send phone, we'd do within the bank or we would send out to others that had volunteered. And then of course, that committee came along
When did that committee first meet? Do you remember?
No, I don't. I think it was, I'd say, it was several weeks. I mean, like, maybe 3, 4, you know. I don't think it was very immediate. I think it took a while for everybody to kind of say, gosh, this is getting big. We're going to have to get organized here. And then they jumped together and did that, and that was a lifesaver.
Did you volunteer?
I did not volunteer on that because, well, I wasn't asked to. I think they had these main people that could cover that area. So that specifically.
Did you volunteer, like, down at the camp or with food at the school? Or
a little bit. Not a lot. Seems like there was other things that were going on that ended up taking my time. And maybe some of that was taking things to those people and doing that kind of thing.
You were working full-time, right?
Yes. Yes. Correct.
And maybe doing some extra stuff because of your bank job?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you lose anything in the fire?
No, not personally.
Uh-uh. Okay. And neither Galen did up his where you had the stuff?
No.
What's your most vivid memory of the fire?
That's a good question. I think reality sunk in, trying to figure out what time it was. I don't think it was very late. You know, it was so dark because of the smoke that it was hard to gauge the time. I want to say it was 6:30, 7:30, and I turned to come down Main Street. I'm not sure what I was doing. I think I was just freaking out. And I turned and I looked over at the church, the St. Joseph's Catholic Church, and I saw that it was just in an orange glow, and that was right when the fire was passing across the highway and across Bear Creek. And that was kind of an aha moment, like, oh my gosh, this is close. And the other kind of terrifying moment, there was only one for me. It was really getting dark at this point. Again, I don't know the time. And I was going back out to the cemetery again, probably my 5th time out there, going back out the cemetery, because I could really gauge where the fire was that very easily and how fast it was coming on us and where it was, at least I thought I could. And I'm driving up the lane, the tree lane. My son calls, and bless his heart, I told them we were evacuating, but I'd never reported back to anybody, and they were getting a little torqued. And I got over the hill, and I gasped, and I said, oh my gosh, I've got to go. Scare the kid to death. I didn't speak to him again until like 9:30 that night. But he could keep up with me on Facebook, okay?
Yeah.
So anyway, I had gotten over this hill, and the flames were huge, and I knew it was burning something. I don't know whether it was burning cotton balls barn or if it was burning... It was burning something big. It was either a hunk of tree rose, it was burning a barn, a house, something. And it was, of course, after in that direction. And I went down to that corner. It was cold now. It was darn right cold, and I was wanting to take pictures. When I said I loaded up my cameras and equipment, that was in Galen's truck when we were going to leave. Well, then we decided that we weren't going to leave, and I got in my car. And I left some of my equipment in his truck. So I didn't have the really good stuff with me. I just had like more like a portrait-type lens with me. And so I didn't get as good of pictures as I could have, probably. But anyways, I decided, oh, heck, I'm going to take pictures of this. And I'm down here in the very, very far northwest corner of the cemetery trying to take this picture of this these flames that are just red and orange, and the black is all around it, and kind of blue. There's a blue-purplish haze around everything. I take some pictures, and I'm finally thinking, you know, I'm going to get out of here, and I'm thinking, to go. Again, my brain was like, maybe we really do need to leave Ashland, and I head back down to Galen. But as I come up, if you remember, when you turn to drive east up out of the cemetery by the mausoleum, there's a hill there, and there's a mound of dirt that they use to put some of the extra dirt when they extricate the graves, and I got past that, and that whole pasture was on fire beside me. And it might have been a quarter mile away, but it wasn't coming slowly. And my heart jumped because I had no clue. If I'd have stayed any length of time after that, that I probably would have been trapped down there because of the fences and stuff. I don't know how I would have got out of there because I was in that fenced-in little L. So I get the heck out of there, and I come back to town. I think that's when I went and told Galen what was going on. It's really big. It's calming down. It's coming straight from the north now. And I drove back out toward town, and it was already crossing the highway by that time. I mean, it didn't take 15 minutes, maybe 20. So that was a really aha moment. It was scary for me, and the church all aglow was one of the first things that just
did you ever
shocked me.
Think of an evacuation plan if you did have to leave later?
not till I might make one now. No,
but not that night.
No.
And where was Galen while you were?
He was still at the shop trying, and he was over at Ramona Snails, and he was trying to save her stuff. He was watering down her roof and her house, and she's got trees right up against there, and he was trying to take care of her too, and you know, that's he was just, if it were not for that wheat field, Bozidon's wheat field out there on the north side of town, it would have hit us. It would have hit Ashland, and it would have probably started there. It could have easily traveled, you know, the wind was blowing, we could have got embers, and they could have caught the golf course on fire, and there's the creek bed in there that's not mowed in the golf course, and it could have happened. It really could have happened.
So what was the smoke like in town?
You know, I saw some pictures that were really, really thick and black over at Inglewood, and I don't really remember it being that bad. It was very dark and hazy, and I mean really thick. It was gray. You couldn't see. I drove up to the west side of town and looked back to town. First, I started out at the TV tower and tried to look back to town, and you couldn't see town. So I moved up quite a ways. I wasn't to Bisles. I was at the top of the hill. And I looked back down into town, and you still couldn't make anything out. It wasn't black smoke, but you just couldn't see what it is. More like that fridge. It was kind of a platinum color.
Did you have any trouble breathing?
Yes. But so, not till like the night. You know, I didn't realize I would have had it until I settled down.
And then you were home by then, or?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I didn't. And the smell. You know, you noticed that the next day, too. You didn't notice it then. Well, you smell the smoke. Yeah, I remember smelling the smoke.
So, have you ever been involved in, like, a wildfire before, or any kind of a prairie fire type thing, or have family members that were involved in?
You know, the biggest thing I ever remember is, the answer is no. We had little things, like a tree would catch on fire, and when I was growing up as a kid in Oklahoma, and you'd go stomp it out, or they'd go get a water truck and get it out. And, you know, you never had more than an acre go down. You never imagined it like this.
Yeah, so how would you describe your emotional response to the fire and what you have done to help yourself cope with that emotional response?
Emotional response. numbness, helplessness. It's probably my two biggest things I can think of. I walked around kind of in a, I think we all kind of did, walked around in a daze for a while, and you kind of talk things out through with each other. And that's where, when I did the book, that came about, because I personally knew I couldn't make a dent in helping anybody financially. I could give them $100, but, you know, that's not going to do anything.
Right.
So that's where my fundraiser idea came from.
So how many pictures did you put together to make that book?
I think there were 71.
And you did all the writing?
Yeah.
And did you self-publish?
Yes. Well, I mean, I just sent it to a photography company and had them publish it, print it for me.
So are you finished getting copies made, or are you still open?
You know, probably. I'd still be open. I have probably about 7 more on me. And, you know, if down the road there was a need that somebody thought we should reissue them, it wouldn't be that hard to do. It's already made. It's just kind of a hassle getting them to people and things.
So how many copies did you make?
Over 500.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, so did you have any physical or financial effects from the fire? Did you have trouble breathing for a while? Or
a little bit of just the heaviness of the breathing and, you know, things, not financially. Well, I shouldn't, yeah. I mean, it's going to affect my husband's work. There's not, I mean, he's a taxidermist, and there's not going to be the animals out there that, to hunt. And there's probably going to be people that don't think they ought to hunt this year or next year or maybe the next year. So I think we will feel, and I know he's also a guide, and I know they're going to cut back significantly on that for at least this year. I don't know about the next couple. They kind of want to work gradually back into it. So we'll feel a hit, absolutely.
So can you perceive of anything positive that's resulted from the fire?
Absolutely.
Like what?
Like the people that you don't know that want to help. The volunteers that drove everywhere from, you know, Canada to from Texas, and Texas even burned, and we had people from Texas here, you know. We had so many people sending money. People called from all over, you know, being in that hub. I got phone calls from all over, and they would listen to the story, and they'd ask, and then they'd ask, what can we do? What do you need? Can we send things? Can we send money? You know, where do we send it? You know, what do you need help with? And, I mean, these folks were just all over it.
So what type of story did you tell them? When somebody asked what happened, what was the initial things that you told people?
Basically the story that the fire started in Oklahoma, crossed over, came into us, and then the fire, when the wind changed, we got the fire from the other direction that was burning in Clark County, in eastern Clark County, right, northern Clark County, sorry, and that we had it on all four sides, and we were literally surrounded by fire. And then, you tell them about the cattle that are lost, and that had over 120 structures, and you know, how many were homes, and the fences. I mean, the list went on and on, and so you know that's what they wanted to hear. They wanted to know what was like, because they kept telling us, we don't hear it anywhere else. We haven't heard it on the news.
How much did you think social media helped?
Oh, a lot. Probably tremendously. I believe that social media helped us tell our story in many ways. From the beginning of while the fire was going on to where to send proceeds, to announcement of different things happening and where to be to help move stuff from this place because school was starting, you know, all that. Yeah, definitely. It was a huge help.
What'd you think of all the strike forces that came to town, the fire teams?
Oh, that was cool. I was numb and in awe for a couple of days. And it was just amazing to see them. Does anybody have a number? Is there a number, like, Is it more than 45?
Probably Millie's got a number.
I'm just curious because, that was, you know, one thing, I don't know if you saw it or not, but one thing I did do shortly after the fire was I put together a video. And it was basically a slideshow. And it was pictures that I had taken through the fire. Some were cell phone, some were not. It wasn't anything professionally done. But I did have some pictures also of the fire trucks and the fire engines from all the different states and counties in Kansas that came from miles and miles away. And then toward the end of it, I put where to send the money, which was our initial, ended up being more than that. We I think that one said 300 and some odd thousand acres, but we still had the fire going the next day, so we hadn't even accounted for it. So it wasn't quite, it's not quite accurate today. It was at that moment. But that thing was circulated, that was shared over 800 times, like within a week. It was just poof. And I do believe that did a lot of circulation and maybe, I hope, was good for us to get the word out that we, what happened to us.
So did you go down and eat at the school or at the camp when the volunteers were here?
No, I went one day to visit with volunteers and to help a little bit, but I kind of stayed out of the way. I'm very self-conscious about taking my things, taking pictures, and I'm very self-conscious about causing somebody to feel uncomfortable, or if they're working on something, it's really not my business. I don't want to be a reporter per se. I just kind of wanted to record a little history. So I did have a few people that I got pictures of. I did get pictures of some of the first hay trucks coming in. That came in at night, and that was so fun because, you know, they come down the road and they just honk their horns and they just give you so much hope when you saw that, especially in the beginning. And then it just kept coming and coming, and it was amazing.
So what was the reaction of your children when you finally told them that you were okay? And
my son is not a real emotional kid, so he says he was mad, but he didn't let me. He didn't, you know, he was like, well, you could have called kind of type thing. My daughter was livid. And she literally called me the day after the fire and just chewed me up one side down the other. And I was still in tears from the fire. I was not a happy camper with her. I know she wasn't with me either. But it was like, I don't need this right now. But she was really mad.
So what can you do or to prepare for a future event of this magnitude?
You know, we're trained to be get the heck out of town or get underground when there's a tornado and you come back up and if your stuff's gone, you deal with it. This was a whole different scenario that I never in my life imagined. I guess my first instinct would be to follow the instructions given and get out of town. But you know, I don't know. I didn't even grab clothes. I didn't even grab medication. My brain was thinking, the fire's getting close. They're going to evacuate Ashland for, you know, just to for cautionary purposes, and we'll be back in a couple hours. I mean, I didn't think I need clothes. I didn't think I would need medication. I didn't think I was going to need anything, you know. I was just going to get my dogs and let them have their dinner and be back for supper.
So what about the community? What type of things can they do to prepare?
Oh, man, I thought they did an awesome job. They just did the EMS, you know, Millie Fudge and those guys just did an amazing job. She was prepared. She had us on, you know, she had us getting ready. The other thing maybe is have a few more people out in the fields doing the disc thing or putting the barriers around town. I mean, we had that happening, and part of that would, as I was told by a fireman, that saved our new hospital. And I think it probably saved the south end of town. Past Swanson's old house and down in that area, I think it saved a lot. It could have really gotten bad down there. And, you know, so that was a great thing to do. I don't know. I think they did it right.
What about the group of volunteers that got together and set up, you know, the hay distribution and that type of stuff?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think there were, I don't remember, I had a sheet once that you had somebody to call for fencing, you had somebody to call for hay, you had somebody to call for supplies, and you had somebody to call for money, and then you had somebody to call for media. And so we had like this list of five, and there might have been one for veterinary too. There were five or six, that's what it was. There was one that was cattle related. I don't think it was just veterinary, but all those things. And so these people, which they got pretty burned out. And when there was another one, there was one for the volunteers that were coming to help. So, I mean, they got burned out, and I know that the folks down from the Thank God for Mel Hank and the people at the Christian church that and the camp that ran that thing and those all by the volunteer there, it just came together just perfectly, you know. We couldn't have done it without all the volunteers.
So working in the bank after the fire was over and people started coming in and telling their stories, did you have a lot of time that... how did you deal with that? I mean,
it got loud. You know, not only did we have people coming in locally that told their stories, there were days that we had people in there that we hadn't seen for years. I think for a few weeks, Ashland was a tourist attraction, especially for alumni or anybody who'd grown up here or worked here. You know, those folks came and they wanted to see it for their own eyes.
Landowners,
sure.
That
were from distance, yeah. And so I got noisy in there at times.
So what kind of remarks did they make?
It was pretty much all the same thing. You know, I can't believe this, or that even this is gone, and, you know, I don't know how we're going to do it. I know, that wind, we didn't get the rain, and that was, you heard that over and over, you know, we need rain, I don't know how we're going to do this without rain, that was so gloomy for the first, 3 weeks that we didn't have any rain. And so it was very negative for a while. I was a downer.
Yeah. So, that is something else. What about the Community Foundation? How did they decide that they wanted to open that up and take donations from all over? Was that a... quickly done thing, or?
Yeah, it came together pretty quickly. You know, originally, the recommendation was to send it to the KLC, because the KLC had a proven method of how to distribute these funds. But we found out when visiting with them that they would not designate where the funds would go. They would not specifically say it's going to go to Clark County, because if you remember, Hutch and Reno County had a fire, too. And so if somebody wanted to go to Clark County, it wasn't going to happen. So we had to come up with something. And I worked closely with some of the people on that foundation, and they got their heads together, and they had, I think they came up maybe with the same plan as the KLC or very similar, too, of being fair. And that was, and plus the fact that they were a 501c3, so donations could be deductible for anybody who donated, and that's, you know, it just was the perfect fit. It was like they had to do it, and it was a lot of work for them, but they had to do it.
Yeah. Is there something that stands out in your mind about the whole thing, you know, that may strike you funny now, or that you can't believe still happened?
Gosh, not off the top of my head. I just still am dumbfounded or in awe of all the good that has come from people, of all the prayers that have been said for us, of all the funds and volunteers, and all the rain. I mean, we've gotten so many blessings since that fire. You know, after going through the drought, and we were just hanging our heads. And then this we get a little rain, And this fire comes, and it just took everything we had, that all that hope away that we had started to build up. And we were all down. The wind's blowing it all over the place. It was awful. You couldn't see. People couldn't tear down their fences. They wore handkerchiefs over their faces to keep the wind, the dirt and sand out of their faces while they were working outside. And then the rain came, and the people came, and it was... You almost feel guilty at this point that we're sitting as good as we are. Now, I'm not a farmer or a rancher either. But I do know that a lot of them have had the opportunity to have some help.
So talk about the smell of the smoke after the fires actually died down.
Yeah. It was weeks. You would get up in the morning and you would smell it. I didn't smell it so bad in my house. But you'd open the door, and it was just wet campfire, and it smelled like that for a really long time. And then it would kind of fade throughout the day, and you get up the next morning, and it was back, and sometimes it was much stronger than others. And sometimes, especially after a dew or something, it would really just be pungent. It was sometimes nauseating. It's just yucky.
Yeah.
It was a reminder. It just seemed like it was just... And again, that was all right there in that downer time. That 3 weeks or so that we had of kind of helplessness.
So, after the fire, like, say, a couple weeks, did you go east out of town?
Mm-hmm.
And what was your first impression of going, like, clear to Sitka?
It's just so black. You know, you just look. And again, it took me forever to take any pictures. And I didn't go too far out there. I went on the lake road. Oh, gosh. I went on the lake road. I went to go take something out to some friends. And that's how I would, instead of volunteering downtown and stuff, I was trying to take care of individual people. And I had some a meal that I was trying to take out there. And, you know, you go and you see... It just looked like a desert. It looked like the apocalypse. It was just looked like some of the bomb had gone off and just blown everything away, and all that was left was yucca plants. There wasn't even grass in some of the spots. I mean, it was just dirt and yucca plants. It's like, where did it go?
So, like going east out of town and seeing the no buildings, how did that affect you?
Odd. Just... take your breath away. You almost lost where you were, your bearings. You know, we know, it's kind of like walking through the house in the dark. You know where your furniture is, so you know you had your bearings about you. Well, it wasn't like that anymore. Felt like you were in another planet.
That's true. So do you have any other thoughts or conclusions about this experience that you'd like to share? Anything we haven't talked about?
I can't think.
How'd your dogs handle it?
They were a little weirded out while the fire was going on. And they wanted to run so badly, but everything was burnt and you couldn't really, you know, run them in town. They handled it okay. It wasn't huge. But that day they were very tucked down and kind of scooted around and like something was up, you know. Like you couldn't put your finger on it, but they did all right. Which I've got one, and she was the one that was the most agitated by it. And, you know, she's the kind that doesn't like the thunderstorms and stuff. So
yeah, didn't like this either.
Yeah, she knew that. She's very sensitive, I guess, that mm-hmm. she knew that something was going on.
Cool. So any other thoughts?
I don't think so. I'm trying to scan my little brain, but no, I'm just thankful that we're all here and that there weren't as many lives. That's amazing. That's an amazing thought right there. I mean, you know, I work with Brandon Grigsby, and I hope he comes and talks if he hasn't yet. You know, why he's here today has only got to be a God thing. Same thing with Mark and Eva. You know, these people kind of you know, they told me they were mad at me for staying in town, that I should have evacuated. Well, what's the difference between what I did and what the people that were trying to save their homes did? I mean, we were trying to save, you know, Galen's property because it was on the edge of town. And so it's the same thing.
Yeah, it is.
So that's why we were here.
Yep.
Anything else?
That's it.
Okay. Thank you for your time. We appreciate you sharing your experiences with us.
You bet.